No, because you talk however loud you want to talk. That is how you do it.
I'm going to talk soft this time.
No, you won't.
This is Marathon Chick. Hi, this is Marathon Chick.
Now I'm going to sound like Chat. Billy from Black Christmas.
No, I'm talking like Jimmy.
Iris, it's time for Marathon Chat.
Wow. Should I do New York Ripper?
Question number one. Why haven't you shown New York Ripper at the marathons?
Answer? Translation not available.
Hey, check it out. It's Marathon Chat time. And you know what?
Check it.
Check it. And we're actually, believe it or not, we're talking about the real marathon.
Yeah, that's happening.
Those of you tuning in today hoping for a discussion about the 2002-2003 Studio 35 Horror Marathon.
Thank God we're done with that. No,
that's coming, but we actually have a real marathon that hasn't happened yet to talk about.
Yes, we are looking to the future.
The future.
All the way to 1997.
Everything will happen. Yeah. Yeah, this should be fun. It's time, finally, after much teasing and predictions about lineups and other things like that.
Now, we're going to talk about we're just going to give a little rundown of the movies that were announced a couple weeks ago.
Wait, I have to do my Picard facepalm. It is the Shock Around the Clock, the 7th Annual Ohio 24-Hour Horror Marathon, October 17th and 18th at the Drexel Theater, our beloved home.
And they did announce that you announced them a couple weeks ago.
At Chocorama!
At All Night Chocorama, and then later on Facebook and Twitter.
By the way, I have to explain to you, and then by proxy to the people out there in podcast land.
Yeah.
The reason why I do that Picard facepalm whenever I say the title...
that nobody hears.
No, but you've talked about it enough. I have this weird mental block where ever since we included Ohio in the annual 24-hour marathon, I always mess up the order unless I put that in... I can't even say it right now talking
You're
about
like
it.
Norman Bates answering the questions from... I'm making a mental picture.
I have all the words. You know. I just have to order them correctly. So saying
like some candy corn?
7th Annual Ohio 24-Hour Horror Marathon, I always put Ohio somewhere else in that whole thing if I don't just sit here and go...
Aww. The 7th Annual Horror Ohio Marathon. Oh, damn
just
it.
Think about it. 7th Annual 24-Hour Horror Marathon.
Seventh
easy. 7th Annual... 24 Ohio Hour. See? Yeah.
Brainly. We're brainwaves.
7th Annual 24-Hour Horror Marathon, Ohio.
Now, we will probably just gloss over the ones that had already been announced, which were Shock Value, The Keep.
We announced Deathgasm earlier in the week, but you and I have not talked about that yet.
No, we haven't, but we've talked about The Keep and we've talked about Shock Value. Yeah. There wasn't another one.
Those are the only two we announced months in advance.
Okay.
Keep in 35mm, not available on DVD, not available on Blu-ray, at least domestically. Shock Value, the movie, is the USC compilation of student short films from the 70s, including John Carpenter, Dan O'Bannon. And the short film that is kind of the prototype for a lot of the slasher films to come in the 70s, in which Dan O'Bannon plays a Michael Myers / Jason Voorhees type character. Yeah. Supposed to be really cool.
Speaking of slasher movies.
Yes!
This leads into a question that I had heard a mutual friend of ours ask this, and I thought it was an interesting question.
Mutual friend named Robert Downey.
Yes. He was dressed in orange and
he's like, hey man, why don't you ask the question.
But the question was, and I thought that this is a fair question, because sometimes everybody's like, why aren't you showing this movie? And it's like, well, you could spend all day saying specifically why you aren't showing any number of movies. But let's just talk genres. He had asked, he'd wondered why there aren't more 80s slasher films shown.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fair question, because there's a lot of them.
Yeah,
just out of curiosity. I mean, I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just curious as to why.
It's never. Well, maybe I shouldn't say.
Some
never.
Have shown.
Yeah, yeah. It for a long time, it has not been some kind of conscious decision not to show more 80s slasher films. If that makes any sense, I'll admit, back in the day when I was younger and stupider, or just younger, one of the two,
which is a fine way of saying I'm smart now.
Back before I was enlightened,
smarty
back
guy.
Before I saw the light and. The face of God touched me. Wait, can a face? No,
why
okay,
did the
wait.
Face of God touch you?
I don't know. Maybe that wasn't the face of God.
Inappropriate touch.
That was Jimbo. Shit. Way back when, I kind of had this prejudice against like the Friday the 13th films because I thought, oh, they're kind of junky. I still think some of the Friday the 13th films are junky, but we've shown other junky films too.
Well, but as Bollock says in Raiders of the Lost Ark, you take this crappy $10.
Bollock, you mean Bellick?
Bellick, yes.
Bollock. He's not a ball. Well, Bellick's probably very...
Bellick.
They called you take this... To quote John Rhys-Meyers, they called him Belush.
Belush.
Followed by Belush. Ford saying,
Bellock.
Bellock.
Bellock. You bury this watch in the sand for 1,000 years, it becomes priceless.
Yeah.
So you bury the 80s horror movies in the sand for 30 years.
Well, I know we've always talked about showing Nightmare on Elm Street. Mm. We've come close a couple times. For one reason or another, it just hasn't worked out. Mm. I think part of it is we know... This is part of that weird dynamic of booking horror marathons or sci-fi marathons or marathons in general, is you always think, we're going to be doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
There's no rush to show... Mm. This thing or this
There'll
thing.
There'll always
thing.
Be the chance
yeah,
to show.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Come back a year from now and we'll say, well, screwed the pooch by not showing Nightmare. Boy, now that we're collapsed.
We'll always be able to show Dawn of the Dead on 35.
Always, always. So, Nightmare we've talked about. Yeah. Believe it or not, for the Shocker-Rama triple feature we ran, one of the titles we bandied about showing was Friday the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
But it would have been around a slightly more advanced conceptual idea behind the event, and we weren't able to pull that off in time, so maybe we'll try to do that in the future. I would say there's not a situation where we'd never show Friday the 13th at an event we sponsor. Mm-hmm. The person you're talking about, I know who that is, Mr. Downey.
Yeah.
And I have been very upfront with them for a long time that if we could ever get the resources to show Friday the 13th in 3D, we'd do it in a heartbeat because that would be so much
one.
Fun.
Yeah.
We just can't get... We don't have the right 3D setup.
Okay. Do they... Because that was originally polarized, wasn't it? Was it available polarized? Because the only time I've ever seen Prince was Anaglyph.
It was originally polarized, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I was like 5 when that came out, yeah. So I didn't get to see it.
Well, I didn't see it in the theater, but I had seen it in the theater, but it was an Anaglyph print.
Yeah, I've seen the DVD, I know, is Anaglyph.
Yeah, and the Blu-ray.
And the Blu-ray, too.
The new Blu-ray, yeah.
Yeah, which was hard to watch.
It's Anaglyph. Yeah, especially now that we're trained, because you got Real D and...
Yeah. Some of the stuff, some of the other 80s slasher films, The Funhouse is one we've talked about a few times.
Is that Tobe Hooper?
Tobe Hooper, yeah. Which is a pretty underrated little gem. Other 80s slasher films, some of them...
This is from the 90s. You could show Clown House and then molest kids in the middle of the break.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for showing up.
And then we could show Jeepers Creepers. We put a candy truck outside.
Sure.
Not a real candy truck, just a van with no windows that says candy written in marker.
I think we have a concept coming up. Yeah. Some of the other 80s slasher films, some of the more obscure ones, or even some of the less obscure ones, like The Burning. Yeah, that's been something we've
notorious
thought about. Yeah, it's just booking the marathon is such a weird process because you come up with every year. I think we come up with at least 2 to 4 titles right off the bat where we think that would be cool to show this year, whether it's an anniversary, whether it's a concept, whether mm-hmm. it's a death. I mean, we knew we'd play something by Christopher Lee this year.
Yeah.
Whether it's sudden availability and we know we might not have it for a while.
Yeah. Blade Runner last year or earlier this year.
Well, yeah. Well, and for sci-fi, we had the women in sci-fi theme that was dominant at that point. So sometimes those films start off and then you start getting into what else is available and then you start getting into cost, cost is a really big deal. I know it always sounds like we're crying poor when it comes to this, but...
Well, but it can rack up fast.
It can rack up. And there are several films in the lineup this year that people want to see, but we're paying a pretty decent chunk of change for.
Yeah.
Because that's how we have to do it if we want to show them.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but it does play into why certain films get booked as opposed to other things. I'll give you an example. We're playing It Follows this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think It Follows is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the main decision to book that was, okay, it's something that's recent. It's not a blockbuster film. I'm sure there will probably be some people who come to this event who have not seen it. But it's something
I think... It's not as underseen as your next was.
No. But I think it would be something that is recent that would play well with this audience that would, or at least inspire people to talk about it.
Yeah.
Part of the motivation, too, was it was affordable.
Mm-hmm.
With the things that we were looking at and the rentals we'd have to pay, we thought, in this case, with what we already have, we don't want to give up this stuff that's more expensive. So how do we fit other things in that are good and that will play well but won't break the bank? And sometimes that does factor in. And it's a crapshoot. One year, you might get less films that cost more.
Yeah.
This year, we have at least three or four films that cost a bit more than we normally pay, but we want to bring them in because they're worth it. So there are so many factors that play into that. I'll admit, and a lot of times when Bruce and I book these events, that we tend to have a slightly artier bent to things.
Yeah.
Slightly, maybe.
Strange color.
Yeah, I know you'll always go back to that. It's not my fault you couldn't understand it. It's okay. I get it.
Oh, should I? Should I have read the book beforehand?
You should have read the book beforehand, yeah. Just a bit.
Also, to quote Indiana Jones.
Thank you. Thank
son
you.
Of a bitch.
I think any kind of event, any kind of marathons, any kind of things like this, you're always going to get some bleed through of the programmers, the organizers' personalities.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, I don't think, if you looked at this, I don't think, and maybe I don't have the right perspective because I'm on the inside, I don't think you can look at the marathons we book and say, oh, they're just showing stuff they want to see.
Oh, no, I don't think so. I was just asking because I'm like, yeah, you know, it had. Well, and what's interesting is there was that one year that there was the double marathons.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was Studio 35 did one, and
2004,
you had done
the first two-headed marathon.
And in that one, I remember the lineup of the Studio 35 one I felt was just very uninspired because it was everything everybody's obviously already seen.
You know
and
why?
It was,
because I took the inspiration with me.
That's right. Well, because it was like Friday the 13th, and I think they were showing Ringu
Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, it was all stuff that seemed very, either very recent or very easy, and that's not to downplay them, but it's almost like, you know, find somebody who hasn't seen Halloween, and then I guess, because there is this, I mean, because there's a lot of the really weird, obscure ones, the small ones, you know what I mean? There's a whole bunch of just little, you don't even know existed, you forget existed. You know, do you show Prom Night, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is big, but, you know, or do
would
you
be
show,
fun to show too.
Happy Birthday to Me, or Fool's Day, all these like.
Here's part of it too, and it's this is a weird thing to talk about because I'm guessing a lot of people don't care about this.
Mm-hmm.
But we try to care about this, and that is the format.
Yeah.
And we've always been very upfront that we try when we can to get 35mm,
yeah.
Even though there have been a lot more DCP options that have opened up in the last couple of years. We always try to have at least a few 35mm films out there, and then we try to default where we can to DCP. Yeah. Sometimes, too, we know, like, let's say there's something like Prom Night, and if we don't have access to a 35mm print, but we know that maybe in time we could find one, we might hold off. We might not say that year, like, hey, guess what? We're going to show Prom Night when we can find a print.
Yeah.
But in the back of our heads...
You don't want to announce we could have shown this,
but in the back of our heads, we're thinking that might pop up at some point.
Sure.
And it's often a case where if there is a 35 print of something, that doesn't automatically mean we can show it. There are a lot of complicating factors that go into us being allowed to do something like that.
Yeah.
When we can, we try to limit the amount of, say, you know, if we have to show something from Blu-ray. Delicatessen, the great example.
Yeah.
The only way we could get Delicatessen for Sci-Fi 2 years ago on 35 was to import a print from France. And we don't have a rich uncle, so we couldn't do that. Yeah. And there's no DCP. So we took the Studio Canal Blu-ray and ripped it to DCP. Looked fine.
Oh, looked great, yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes, but still, like, I think and Bruce might laugh at me, maybe I should say my preference is shoot for 35. If you can't get 35, go for DCP, and then go down from there. And sometimes with something like Prom Night, it's just kind of been in that nether world of that. Does that mean we'll never show that stuff? No. It's just, I don't know. Is this all a roundabout way of saying I don't have a really great reason why we haven't? Kind of hasn't.
Well, I think not having a reason is an interesting reason on its own, just because it's like, oh, it just hasn't come out.
I'll throw a bone to everybody, and I've mentioned this to you before. But I've always thought, said this for years, that it would be cool to do a festival leading up to sci-fi and a festival leading up to horror. And one of the ideas that I've kicked around is, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we did like a 3-week-long festival before the marathon, one or two nights a week, and we did the slasher film or like the history of the slasher film.
Completely programmed around Sleepaway Camp.
Completely programmed around Sleepaway Camp, yeah. And we showed a bunch of films like that. Or we showed like a mixture of classics and lesser known ones. And then we tied it in somehow with the event, be it a guest or somewhere else like that. I think there is one other thing, too, that we have tended to do in our programming. And maybe this is not the right angle. Maybe this is our problem we have. I don't think it is. But I think in recent years, we've really tried to emphasize having most of the films be good or quality. Yeah. While sprinkling in some B movies and sprinkling in some oddball stuff and things like that, because you don't want to just have 12 exorcists, you know. Yeah. But I think sometimes we have a bias towards that. Some of you might laugh at that, I think we have a bias towards that sometimes. And maybe in some ways, by the time we start rolling along with the lineup and we get near the end, it's like, well, we need a few more titles that are actually pretty good that people will want, rather than here's an 80s slasher from like one of the crappier ones that's just kind of doing it to show it.
But even like, there's a big difference between showing Friday the 13th and Friday the 13th Part 5.
Very true. Very true. Or like, you know, another Jamie Lee Curtis film that gets tossed around is Terror Train.
Yeah.
That would be fun to show. You know, it's so hard. You know, you think about it and it doesn't seem to make sense that, oh, you're doing an event every year. Why can't you do it? And you have 12 films, why can't you do it? But 12 films fills up pretty fast, or 11 films, depending on the length.
Yeah.
And it's juggling. You know, it's like 80 slasher films, that's one ball to juggle, and there's a whole bunch of other balls. And sometimes you have to take one of those balls and let it fall or descend.
So what you're saying is you don't...
Come on, do it.
Keep your hands on your balls.
See how I set him up for that? Am I good? Right. Am I a good straight man?
That's a good answer. That's a good enough answer. I think it was good.
That was a long answer.
Let's move on. Well, of course, because it's the marathon. Let's move on to the lineup.
The main event.
I'm just going to go. I'm on the webpage. So let's start
off. Yes, you are.
Deathgasm.
Yes. The Columbus premiere of Deathgasm. So this is so simple. We heard about this film.
It's been orgasm.
Yeah, it's
with death at the beginning.
That's all we need. Le petit mort, as the French would call it.
The small death.
It's. I think I put on the flyer that New Zealand, gory New Zealand film, horror films, and the marathon go together like peanut butter and jelly. Yeah. It was very much a no-brainer. In that we've had a long history of films from New Zealand that are going back to Dead Alive and other Peter Jackson films. Housebound last year was from New Zealand, went over really well.
Oh, yeah.
And this is from some of the same producers. And it's, you know, one of our friends said, you know, when I saw the trailer, I almost thought, boy, you're coming really close to pandering at this point to the audience. I said, you say that like it's a bad thing. Yeah. Come on. Yeah, if you haven't seen the trailer for Deathgasm, it's like everything I think an audience and a crowd film would want. Blood, guts, gore, heavy metal, stoners, Satanism, demons, all sorts of...
All wrapped up in a tiny little bow.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about this.
Awesome.
And I think the audience will dig it, too. And if they don't, I might just lose faith in
I'm
humanity.
Assuming that's going to show pretty early.
First half, minimum. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't know if it was, like, harder... You know, because sometimes when you have something that's a little more, let's just say, edgy... They tend to show a little later, like closer to 10.
Maybe. Oh, you mean earlier as in earlier...
In the lineup.
Earlier as in like 3 p.m. earlier.
Yeah.
Oh. That, I don't know. It
Although your next was pretty harsh.
Well, it's a, it's a horror marathon.
It's a horror marathon.
We're back to this again.
It's a horror marathon.
Please, come on. No, horror, I think we generally get away more often with showing more extreme stuff earlier in the... In Saturday's schedule.
I was just thinking of the 1-2 punch of Flesh for Frankenstein and the Serbian film.
That was quite the 1-2 punch, although Flesh for Frankenstein had all the good stuff taken out.
All the punch. Well, all of it was left in the Serbian film.
Yeah. Yeah. I would think we'll play Deathgasm probably in some kind of prime spot, because you have a crowd film like that. You don't want to play it when people are tired.
No, you don't want to do it at 2 in the morning. Good God.
No. No. But yeah, Deathgasm. Can't wait. That's about all I'll say. I don't want to oversell it too much. I've been accused before of overselling certain films.
It happens.
But
let's move on to the next one on the list, Dawn of the Dead. Never heard of it. What's this about? It's
French,
a love story.
French intellectuals are in love.
Le Petit Mort.
And directed by Jean-Luc Godard. Has a lot of political commentary.
Well, it does have a lot.
Maoist tendencies. Right. And I think everyone will like it. So there we go. Yeah. Dawn of the Dead.
How many times has this played before? Once, unofficially.
I'm wondering if what I say will incriminate us in some ways. Dawn of the Dead has actually never officially shown at a marathon. Officially. It has unofficially shown a couple times. Mm-hmm. Many, many years ago, and I'm not going to claim that I had anything to do with those events or that we did. They were possibly. You can't see my eye roll here, obviously. Well, here's the thing. Dawn of the Dead, the rights holders in recent years have started to license screenings of it. Limited licensing, but they do license it. And it's been a long time since we've shown it. We've always wanted to show it and advertise it, which sounds strange, but...
Was it Richard Rubenstein who just withheld it because he was a dick? Just being a dick, or is it a real reason?
It's a complicated matter, and it's weird. I used to kind of fall back on that excuse, and then I listened to his commentary track on the Dawn of the Dead Ultimate Edition. He does the commentary track on the extended Cannes Film Festival cut. And it kind of turned me around a little bit on him. I mean, he gives some very good reasons why he's tried to protect the property for years. I think maybe he got a little overprotective with time, because ultimately you want people to see the film so they'll buy the video or buy other things, or, you know, your money will come back into your pocket. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure why he was restrictive for a while, but they've been very nice to us at this point, so... Yeah, I mean, it's only my favorite horror film of all time, so there's that. Well, plus, it's Dawn of the Dead. You know, it hasn't shown at a marathon in 12 years.
Yeah.
It's a perennial classic. We were looking for something that was real. It came pretty late in the process, actually, booking this, because we already had some things booked, and then we tried to get a few things that were more obscure, and we thought, okay, how do we finally really ensure that we have at least two or three films that are, like, heavy hitters that casual fans would want to see, or that people who are on the fence would say, awesome, like, this lineup is good, but you've also have this kick ass. And it's a great crowd film.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a great film. I almost have nothing to say, because it's like, it's Dawn of the Dead.
It's the original. It's a horror marathon.
The original. It's a horror marathon. If you can't read the website beforehand, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, let's move on to the next one, Twin Peaks, Fire Walk With Me, in which whoever wrote the website claims to have killed Laura Palmer.
Timely humor, ladies and gentlemen, timely humor.
Humor?
Whore humor, yeah.
Whore humor?
Horror humor? Whore humor? Humor.
So, this was a one that, if I recall, I guess I could say this. This is pulling the veil back a bit. You had wanted to show it last year, didn't you?
Because we talked about it, yeah.
Because the Twin Peaks was just then getting the talk of getting a revival, and recently released it. We're going to release it on Blu-ray or something.
It came out on Blu-ray last summer.
Okay.
And that was summer 2014. And we talked about it then. I always wanted to show it because I'm a huge Twin Peaks fan. I'm a huge David Lynch fan. And you know as well as I do, and we've talked about this enough, and people out there probably know this too. One of the things I always like doing in programming these marathons is to get at least one title, maybe two, that push the boundaries of the genre. Because that to me is what's great about horror or sci-fi. But horror in particular is things that you might not think of as traditional horror films sometimes are the most horrifying, or have the most horrifying type effect. And we've shown some things over the years, I think, that kind of fulfill that. Twin Peaks also is an interesting case, because interest in it is resurgent now with the reboot on Showtime coming up, or the continuation on Showtime coming up, and the release of the Blu-ray set, and just general interest. And it's been 25 years now? 25 years this year since the series was in its heyday. Mm-hmm. And we've had requests over the years. We've mentioned it to people, and there's a pretty decent chunk of Twin Peaks fans out there, or people who might come to the marathon because we're showing it, or that might put them over the edge.
Let me throw this little bit of advice out there. I loved Twin Peaks when it aired. I never actually watched it on its first run. I ended up watching it later, but I love Twin Peaks, and I love a lot of what David Lynch does, and then I respect the rest. Mm-hmm. Is the best way of putting it, I guess. If you're at all worried that watching the original series might spoil it for you, please watch the original series. It doesn't make much sense if you know everything that's going on. If you go into this cold not knowing anything about Twin Peaks, you're going to be like, what?
I don't know about that. I mean,
it's
the main story of the film, the main through line,
yeah,
you could watch this film and pretty much understand what's going on. It does lay that out for you. Now, the prologue, some of the side tangents, things like that, they benefit from having a knowledge of what happened in Twin Peaks before.
Well, there's just I would never show up there and you'd be like, who the hell's that?
Why
is he walking backwards?
Yeah.
That stuff. Yeah.
You could walk into a film like this and look at the main storyline and say, I get that.
Yeah.
That's a disturbing story about what happens between a father and a daughter. That sounds terrible. That's a horrible pitch for the film. Yeah, if you have time, by all means. Like, I mean, Twin Peaks is on Netflix. I don't know if it's on Amazon or not. But, yeah, watch the series.
I encourage you to go watch it.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
If you have the time, do it, by all means. Yeah,
yeah, check it out. Because it's... Yeah, you're right. I mean, anything is, you know, you can say, well, you know, what's that about? War and Peace. It's about fighting. You know, isn't that what Woody Allen said?
I think so, yeah.
But, I mean, there's a lot to it, and there's a lot that's going to leave you confused, even if you've seen the movie.
If you're really, really, really on the fence, yeah, and you get to the week before the marathon and say, I haven't watched the series, I don't know if I want to show up now because I don't want to spoil it for the film. I don't know what to tell you about that.
I didn't tell you. It's a month beforehand, people, for crying out loud.
Well, and
you're like the only person who like argued, no, you don't need to watch anything. Just walk in ignorantly, just plop your money down, get your ass in the seat, and make sure you pay us.
There you go. I didn't say that, but sure. Yeah. It's weird. One of my very, very, very good friends in this world is a huge David Lynch fan too, and he used to do Twin Peaks marathons where he'd do...
Oh my God, I don't know if I could do that.
Do the pilot, the entire show, and the movie. And a couple times we debated...
In a binge watch?
Oh, yeah. Noon Saturday till about 5 p.m. Sunday.
That's like watching, like, let's say, we're going to watch Eraserhead, Blue Velvet, Lost Highway.
It was a lot of fun. When you get to the middle of season two, when it gets pretty bad for 3 or 4 episodes.
Oh, yeah, when they don't know
rough.
What to do.
Yeah. But it was a very neat experience. But we talked about showing Firewalk.
When the secretary was tap dancing, you're just like, Jesus Christ, what's happening? What's her name, Lucy?
Oh, yeah, with the Miss Twin Peaks pageant.
Yeah.
We often talked about if we should show Firewalk with Me before the show, because it is technically a prequel, although in David Lynch's world, to call anything a prequel or a sequel is kind of hazy, because time is such a fluid concept.
It's as much a prequel as the beginning of Mulholland Drive precedes what comes after it.
Yeah, there is the main chunk of the plot in Firewalk with Me, if you haven't seen
it's
any
a Mobius
of this,
strip,
does take place before the series, but there are things that take place that are clearly after the series. Mm-hmm. There was always speculation that Lynch made this film in the hopes that if it did well, he would do a straight sequel to the series, because the series ends on somewhat of a cliffhanger on several aspects.
It's like soap. It ended completely with a cliffhanger.
Well, they ended.
Questions are answered. All loose ends are tied up.
And I think that's one of the reasons why
Annie.
More people didn't get into the movie was they were expecting a sequel, and what they got was not a sequel.
Yeah, this is what's so funny about Twin Peaks: Fire Walk with Me is David Lynch is such a brilliant guy, but he does not live in our universe.
No,
is the best. Oh, so no. For him,
Mel Brooks line, he's Jimmy Stewart from Mars.
Well, it's like he's like, oh, I'll make this movie and then it'll do well and I can. Oh, he makes a movie. People are like, what the hell was that? I can't even wrap my brain around.
And the movie, it's. I read this analysis once of it, which I think is great. In that the opening credits are over a fuzzy TV, and right at the end, someone takes it's either a hammer or an axe or something. Smashes the TV and you hear someone scream. And the analysis said, this is like Lynch saying, remember everything you loved about Twin Peaks the show? Well, fuck that. Because I'm destroying the TV right now because that's not what you get. And it is true in a lot of ways.
It's sort of like the jackknife's truck and the red VW in
The Shining. Yeah, there you go. There you go. A huge F you to Stephen King because Kubrick was that petty. He probably was.
I mean, don't say that like that's a ludicrous thing.
Kubrick might be listening. I don't want to talk too loud. If you come to see Fire Walk with Me and you've never seen it and you've only seen the show and you're expecting the coffee and donuts and quirky humor, it's all stripped out of it. I mean, this is much more of a strange, dark, mildly avant-garde nightmare.
Yeah.
But it's still... I mean,
basically a walk in the park from a David Lynch standpoint.
Yeah, well, and this is why I think... I've often talked about how the final episode of Twin Peaks and parts of the show before then, notably some of the episodes that Lynch directed himself, to this day, if I watch them, say, at night in the dark, they really, really get to me.
Yeah.
And I think what Lynch taps into is... And where some of his greatest strength is in tapping into a very kind of childlike primal sense of fear.
Yeah.
And how he does that, it's hard to describe. It just kind of, it's what he does best at his best. And I think Fire Walk With Me dips into that in parts where it taps into something very, very discomforting from inside you. And there's an argument to be made that that's part and parcel of the main story because of what it deals with and kind of the legacy of passing on those traumas.
But you know what's interesting is I mean, there's this undertone in you talking of almost trying to justify its place in a horror marathon. I never saw this as going, why would this be? Because I'm like, well, that makes it, because Twin Peaks is so indefinable. You can't categorize it. I remember, I don't know if you remember this, but back in 90 and 91, when it was airing, it was covered in Soap Opera Digest.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it was because it was a serialized show. Now, it was not Young and the Restless. And this was back when... But nowadays, there's, three soap operas, two soap operas that are left.
Yeah.
But that was back when soap operas were in their heyday, where there were a dozen on TV. And yeah, they covered Twin... Even though it was on for a year and a half, it got that weird cover, because they didn't know how to... They didn't know what it was.
That was the brilliance of the show, is it was simultaneously a tribute to soap opera and melodramatic conventions, a parody of soap opera and melodramatic conventions, a genuinely cutting-edge show, something that was kind of horrific and frightening, and something that was oddball and funny. Yeah. And it was all those things simultaneously. And you look back, and that's such a hard combination to pull off like that. Because it wasn't just a campy show for campy purposes, even though there were campy parts to it. And Fangoria had Twin Peaks on its cover 2 years ago on the 20th anniversary, I think.
Well, but it was also one of those things that not being able to be categorized. I mean, what do you say? It wasn't a drama. I mean, it was, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
And it has horror elements. Absolutely has horror elements. Absolutely has sci-fi elements to it.
Oh, God. The without giving it away, the infamous Season 2 episode, I think it's episode 6 or 7.
Now you're starting to really sound like a nerd. Identifying the...
You'll know what episode I'm talking about. Well, I remember...
I couldn't tell you what episode it
was. It is where a major revelation takes place that fundamentally changes how you understand several characters.
Yeah.
And famously, originally when it aired, David Lynch did not show the episode to the ABC execs until right before it was about to air. And Stephen King called it probably the most disturbing thing I've seen on TV.
This was, of course, before American Idol.
Yes, so. Yeah. That episode is still to this day. I watched that episode not that long ago, and it's incredibly disturbing what happens on that episode. But what's great about it is what happens in the moment, but also what happens to the characters that are not there. I'm dancing around this a lot, much like a dwarf. What happens in that moment in the show right at the end, but what also happens to the characters who are not there but who feel like the psychic impact almost of what's going on.
Yeah.
It's so horrifying, and it's so kind of heartbreaking and sad. And the way that Lynch was able to work that balance throughout a lot of the show, it's like Agent Cooper, the Kyle MacLachlan character, in some ways is just it's him playing an older version of Jeffrey Beaumont from Blue Velvet.
Yeah.
You know, it's him playing the Lynch surrogate he always played. And Cooper is such a goofy guy, but he's so committed and he's so earnest and Kyle MacLachlan is so good in that part that when you get to parts like that of the show, you really feel for him because, you know, I'm having problems describing it right now. That being said, Kyle MacLachlan is not in too much of Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, so sorry if you've never seen it.
But I will tell you, here's a great indicator in terms of the marathon crowd.
Yeah.
I remember back in the Drexel North days, and it would have been 91 or so, when one of the marathons, and they showed a trailer for The Hidden,
which
was shown a couple years ago at the Sci-Fi, and you know, the trailer's going on, and then suddenly Kyle MacLachlan shows up, and the crowd goes wild
And because the Hidden is like a dry run for Twin Peaks.
Yeah, but yeah, it's very similar to. But the point being is everyone's like, oh, this looks like an interesting enough movie. Fuck, it's Kyle MacLachlan. He's in this movie.
Yeah.
And I realized that wasn't because they loved him in like Dune or Blue Velvet. Even it was because Twin Peaks was super hot right now, and that just showed the kind of people who gravitated toward the show. And even then, the other shows the unique power of Twin Peaks. It created or it launched all these other attempted wannabe shows, stuff Wild Palms and Erie, Indiana, where people were trying to recapture that essence and just failing miserably, like just not at all. Nothing ever even came close. And I even remember when Desperate Housewives started back in like 2004, people were saying, well, it's like Twin Peaks. And I'm like, well, it's like Twin Peaks with all the cool stuff stripped out of it.
The weird
suburban strangeness was there, but you took out all the freak stuff and all the weird stuff and all the alienish or horror elements.
For those of you listening who are younger or who just totally missed Twin Peaks back in the day.
Yeah.
There was nothing like it on TV at that point. I remember...
Or since, really.
Yeah, I remember when it got the cover of Entertainment Weekly, when there was like issue number 3 of Entertainment Weekly, and this major write-up talking about how this is the next groundbreaking event in TV. The media coverage around it. When it debuted, the 2-hour pilot that debuted was the ABC Sunday night movie of the week.
Yeah.
Which, when they used to do that, which was huge. Yeah. I remember watching it, and I was... And it was like this week a special network premiere event, and they treated it like a film. And in many ways, the pilot is. I mean, it was shot.
It was very cinematic. The entire series.
Very, very cinematic.
Before, in 2000, mid 2000s, early to mid 2000s, TV became very cinematic, and that was, I think, driven partly by widescreen televisions and DVD. But in the early 90s, you didn't get cinematic television.
No. And it was so far beyond what other shows were doing.
Yeah.
And
and unreachable by other shows. No one else ever came close.
And the fervor and the intensity of coverage. I remember the week after the season 1 season finale, which left a lot of loose ends not tied up. I was in 8th grade, and we used to get the USA Today every day in our classroom as one of those, you know, school deals.
Yeah.
And the Twin Peaks coverage was everywhere on USA Today. Yeah. Front page, life section, all over the place, every magazine. It was so huge, and it's so interesting looking back at
it. I just have this picture of you sitting alone in your classroom reading the USA Today, and the teacher walks in to find you there, and you turn around and you go, the owls are flying. And then she just like drops dead of fright.
The owls are not what they seem. Come on.
Is that
man.
What that
Come
is?
On, man. You're thinking
I,
of the sparrows.
I was thinking the sparrows are flying
again from the dark.
The owls are flying again. Then you
I'm
just
not a
up.
Geeky guy, not at all.
You.
Yeah, it was amazing, and it's interesting looking back at how that first season was like lightning in a bottle, and there are great moments in season 2, and I think the end of season 2, the last 7 episodes or so, the main storyline is very strong, but it was so hard for them to keep it up, and in part, a lot of the people that worked on it said, ABC, when they first had the show, we had a couple people that were supporting us heavy. And the ratings were great for a while, so they're like, oh, cool, let's go with it. But once there was like a little bit of a dip in season 2, ABC...
Well, the
ABC
after,
showed they didn't,
happened
they didn't,
after the big reveal.
Yeah, well, there's some of that. Well, and they... Famously, they didn't...
They didn't know where to go after.
Well, and Lynch and Frost have talked about this. They never wanted to reveal who killed Laura Palmer.
Yeah.
They wanted to have that be the grand MacGuffin at the center of the show and just have everything else revolve around that and dip in and out of people's lives.
Yeah.
And the network wanted them to reveal that. And the network kind of at some point also, by most accounts, they were never heavily behind it. I mean, they Lynch and Frost had one grand champion at the network who's also working at Showtime now, and it's one of the reasons why they ended up over there.
Yeah.
But it wasn't anything where ABC was going nuts over Twin Peaks, like, wow, this is our thing, because it was a David Lynch project. Well, let's glom on to that. We don't really know what to do with it, but hey, the ratings are great. But once the ratings start going down, we're not going to mind that much if it goes away, because it's kind of an oddball show and we have better things that we can develop ourselves and blah, blah, blah. This is a long conversation.
And then we'll finish up Twin Peaks.
Sure.
Request.
Sure. Yeah.
Can we get Damn Fine Cherry Pie at the concession stand?
I so, so want to get Cherry Pie, Damn Fine Cherry Pie, and some good coffee and some good donuts.
Not just... Cherry pie, but damn fine
your cherry pie. Definition of damn fine might vary. But
I just don't know if I need to sneak some in my pants.
Oh, the great debate. Wow, that would be damn warm.
Hey, point. Keeps it warm.
I was at the Twin Peaks Fan Festival in 1996, and the Marti Cafe, which is now called Tweed's Cafe, which is the Double R Diner, the real life one. Back then, they still had it all decked out in a lot of the Twin Peaks type decorations and architecture. And I remember hearing the story that David Lynch's favorite pie to eat there when they were on location was the peanut butter chocolate pie. And the woman who owned the place at the time was the same one who owned it when they shot Twin Peaks and the North Bend footage. And I had a piece of that chocolate peanut butter pie, and that was indeed probably the damn finest piece of pie I've ever had in my life. Unbelievable. Now, she doesn't own the place anymore, so I can't attest to
I don't think we're going to import cherry pie or peanut butter chocolate pie.
We have time. I think we can work on trying to figure.
But there's got
to
be a place in Bexley that makes pies.
I'm guessing.
I'm sure so.
Are you volunteering to make some damn fine pies?
I'll bring a pie.
5 weeks.
Want me to make a pie? Will you fund it? I already bought my tickets. Can I at least get the ingredients back?
Will you fund the pie making?
I will make a pie. I will absolutely make
a pie. Twin Peaks Firewalk with pies. Me. The owls truly are not what they seem.
Yes. Let's move on from owls.
Because I know some of you out there are like, enough Twin Peaks.
Two shrews. The Killer Shrews, 1959. Fresh off of 20 years ago being an MST episode.
Yeah.
Starring Roscoe P. Coltrane.
We obviously always try to show something in black and white. We obviously try to show something that's... a little schlockier when we can.
Yeah.
This was another one where the development was weird because we had another title that we had booked before this, which I won't name because we still want to get it at some point. But we found out a week before we made the announcement that the print, the 35mm print of that title, that the final reel was warped.
Oh, no.
And we couldn't show it. And the only video source, it was not that great. So from the same company that distributes these films, we said, well, what else do you have? And Killer Shrews came about. And you know, I've never even seen Killer Shrews. I've only seen the trailer. But boy, if you've seen the trailer, I think that's all you really need.
They're dogs and shag carpeting.
Dogs as giant shrews. And it's
pretty terrible.
Yeah.
But it's probably like 70 minutes long.
70 minutes in 35mm is never shown in a marathon. And will probably be a lot of fun. I'm guessing will be more fun than Wasp Woman was for sci-fi.
There's a lot more going on than Wasp Woman was.
Yeah. Sorry about that, gang.
All right, so let's move on. Christopher Lee in The Devil Rode Down to Georgia.
The Devil Rode Down to Georgia and said, listen to me, you son of a bitch. I'm the best there ever was. That's Bela Lugosi.
That's Bela Lugosi. My God. You're just mixing everything
actually,
up.
Actually, if I wanted to do a Christopher Lee impersonation of Dracula,
blah, blah, blah.
As time went on in that series, most of his Dracula was...
Yeah, he doesn't even speak in Dracula, Prince of Darkness.
Yeah, famously he cut out all his lines in Prince of Darkness because he thought they sounded terrible.
No.
So it's our Christopher Lee tribute.
Ironically, has one of the greatest speaking voices ever.
I know.
Hear him in the movie.
It's a testament to how iconic he was in that role. As time went on, he spoke less and less, but you still remember him as that.
Blah, blah, blah.
The interesting story behind Devil Rides Out, way, way back in 1993 at my first ever 24-hour horror marathon, The Black Tar Heroine, I believe is what I called it at one point, that really got me hooked in. At that marathon, The Devil Rides Out was supposed to show.
Yeah.
And at the last minute, the Drexel got an offer to show Ticks!
Ugh.
The Ohio premiere of Brian Usner production, Ticks!
Ticks was not very
Clint
good.
Howard and Peter Scolari and Amy Dolenz.
Amy Dolenz and...
Alfonso Ribeiro.
Yeah. The Carlton.
Peter Scolari. That gave it a certain sheen of respectability. Well, that was Peter Scolari about 3 or 4 years after he was a fairly mainstream actor still.
Yeah.
TV mainly, but because he was Saint Elsewhere, right?
No, wasn't
Peter Scolari was.
No, he was on
Bosom Buddies and Newhart. Yeah. That's right. Anyway.
I still don't think he's headline material for anything.
Okay.
Based on, I mean, it's like.
Headline, when, no. When mainstream you say, as in known. Known and does projects that are not just like
people
B-movies.
Were aware he existed. I mean, it would be like putting who's the guy, Ethan Phillips, in a movie. I mean, yeah, people would. I recognize that guy. You know, even with all the makeup in Star Trek, I recognize that guy.
Peter, I'm looking out for you.
You don't sit there and say, you know, when you look at like career trajectories, you had Bosom Buddies, you had Tom Hanks and Peter Scolari. Peter Scolari was the one you didn't want to follow.
Peter Scolari should have been Tom Hanks, and he wasn't, because Hanks screwed him. So
because Hanks stole the big part.
Thanks, Tom.
Which got him the real street
jerk. Yeah.
That was his first real. Did you know that was actually the movie that was the first one that really people took notice of Tom Hanks as a good actor?
Which was?
Big. That was one of the
first
ones.
People
were like, that's really impressive. He did a good job.
That was the first where he really had to show dramatic chops.
Yeah.
Not counting the last scene of Splash.
Yeah, I don't know. Everyone remembers Splash as a goofy comedy, even though Big was. It was, you know, particularly the scene where he was first night in New York and there's a shooting going on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, then Peter Scolari was just trying to get with Julia Duffy and Newhart at the time. So.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, Peter Scolari, get off on a tangent.
We're not even showing anything with Peter Scolari.
Shock Around the Clock number 7 with special guest Peter Scolari.
All right, so
Bumped for Ticks.
Peter Scolari and bumped to the legendary Christopher Lee.
Yeah, Peter Scolari greater than Christopher Lee in that case. Christopher Lee still alive in that case. Mm. Bruce at the time said, we know the person who has the print. We'll show it soon. And it never showed. And we've talked about it over the years. So finally when we got around to
Christopher Lee freaking died.
Yeah, we had to die for the movie to show. But what ultimately came was the tiebreaker for this is it's not shown that much. And Lee often talked very fondly of this as one of his favorite films. So we thought, yeah, this is fun. And it genuinely is. It's probably in terms of pure quality of the story and the plot and everything, it's probably one of the best Hammer films. So we're finally showing that all these years later. Mm. And he plays a good guy, too.
Yeah. Late 60s. Then we move. The next one is House by the Cemetery, which should I say in a bad Italian accent?
Like I'm going to stop you.
should I do
go right ahead. Go
as Bela Lugosi. Blah, blah, blah. This is Lucio Fulci.
Our old pal Lucio Fulci, yeah. In 35mm.
Technically counts as a giallo screening. Is that a giallo?
You want to pull me into this argument?
No, I'm just asking.
Technically, it's like I don't want to be a geek in this case, but technically a giallo film is the more crime-oriented procedural films. Giallo were named that because pulp crime novels in Italy were printed on yellow paper, and yellow in Italian is giallo.
Okay.
So in the Dario Argento canon, Deep Red is a giallo because it's more of a crime thriller with gore elements. Suspiria is not really a giallo. Mm. Suspiria is more of a supernatural horror film.
Generally, you see it listed all the time, though.
Sometimes, yeah. Lucio Fulci stuff, like something like New York Ripper, would be a giallo.
Yeah.
House by the Cemetery is more of a supernatural film.
I've seen it multiple times on lists. That's all I'm saying. I'm just going by. And I know
those lists are wrong.
Well, I know how you program a marathon, and you always say, hey, there's always room for giallo.
Yes.
Okay.
So you are correct,
just Lucio
sir.
Fulci. We'll just Lucio Fulci.
Italian gore, supernatural. If you enjoyed The Beyond that we showed a few years back, this is kind of a distant cousin to that.
Is this
tone?
Is this like a? Has this been? Is this often seen much, or is it just? This seems relatively. It seemed like it was presented as a rare chance to see
a rare 35mm screening.
Rare 35mm screening.
We put rare on everything. The rare was definitely for 35mm.
Oh, okay.
It's also possibly a marketing hook, like new. House by the
Cemetery. Never played at the Drexel.
Well, let's put it this way. The last time House by the Cemetery showed in Columbus,
yeah.
I don't know when that was. It's not like...
Thank you for the...
Well, okay.
When did it... I don't know.
Beats me. So there you
last
go.
Last week.
So take that. Lucio Fulci is actually not screened that much in Columbus. Oh. Or, you know, in the region, maybe, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not something that you see a ton. And if Fulci films, House by the Cemetery doesn't get screened as much. It seems to be, usually when I see Fulci films, it's The Beyond, Gates of Hell sometimes, Zombie, definitely, which we'll have
Zombie's
to bring back
the biggest
someday. No. Yeah. But we thought, hey, it's something Italian, it's something that's more offbeat and has some extreme gore, and people would enjoy seeing it. And there is a very dedicated hardcore Fulci part of the fan base that always asks for more Fulci films.
Cool. Now the next one is a restoration.
Yes.
This one is kind of coming
back.
Yeah. And this is The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Miss Osborne, a film by somebody that I don't know how to pronounce.
Valerian Borochik. Okay, so the story of Valerian Borochik. He was very much like a contemporary of Terry Gilliam. Mm-hmm. Started out in the 50s and 60s as an animator, Polish animator. And did a lot of cutting edge work back then and was very, very highly acclaimed for being, you know, in the grand tradition of Polish animators. I mean, there's a whole school of Polish animation from that era that is, you know, to this day revered, even as we speak. Well, Borochik got into feature film.
Wait, nope. No, it's no longer revered. As we speak, it suddenly stopped being revered.
Today?
No, just like literally
in this
seconds
moment,
ago. Yeah.
R.I.P. Polish animation. So Borochik got into feature filmmaking. And I believe made a couple features before he made his big international breakthrough hit, a little movie called Immoral Tales.
Yeah.
And Immoral Tales is a triptych of stories or an anthology of stories. One is based on the Elizabeth Báthory story, which has been the basis for like every lesbian vampire film, you know, the bathing in blood.
I approve of lesbian vampires.
And there's a couple others. I've never seen Immoral Tales. It was kind of a fairly big hit in Europe. And kind of a bigger hit in America, too.
Yeah.
But it got Borochik the reputation as just being a pervert because it's a very sexually explicit film. He also made a film called The Beast that was the Beauty and the Beast story, but the Beast has a huge phallus and there's more explicit.
Wait, on him or
on
just
him.
Like in his,
on him,
in
like,
his dresser
like sticky,
at home?
Sticking out. It,
hey,
it's almost
let me
like,
go get it.
It's almost like a highly erotic, perverse fairy tale.
Is it like Pazuzu from The Exorcist where you're like, well, oh, it's a demon. Holy cow, my God. I didn't see that the first time. I thought that was a shadow.
Yeah. Well, he made that and he made a couple other films and he always kind of towed that line. People wanted to kind of brand him as a pervert or a mild pornographer. But he had his defenders,
too. I'm liking
too.
What I hear.
Well, he did. Well, it's a strange thing is that a lot of his films from that era towed that line, and some people forgot the very beautiful arty qualities about the film.
See, this is
and all they
odd.
Saw was the sex.
It's very odd that you're talking about this being the sexual film because it's got Udo Kier in it, and he never does anything.
Never.
Like that.
No. He is as chaste as the driven snow.
He does Disney movies. And
well,
that's it.
Okay, without giving away too much, here's the interesting thing about Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Miss Osborne. He made this in 1981 or 82.
Yeah.
And Arrow Films, who just do the Lord's work or the devil's work, depending on how you define that. The Criterion collection, essentially, of horror, exploitation, sci-fi, do lavish special editions of things. They took to restoring Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Miss Osborne a couple years ago. And they just put out a really nice Blu-ray in the spring. And we're getting their DCP flown in from London, actually.
Wow.
We're getting their DCP from that. And it's the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde story, but it really plays up some of the inherent nastiness of the story, too. You know, the Jekyll and Hyde story has always been, you know, a story of Victorian repression versus base impulses. This takes it a little bit farther. Now, it's weird talking about this because
I like how you say that as if the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde story was just this breezy romance normally, but added some darkness to
it. Yeah, well, I mean, like previous cinematic incarnations of Jekyll and Hyde, it played up the fact that Hyde was evil, but it was like Hyde was evil, but what you saw was still tame in some ways. You think of the Frederick March Jekyll and Hyde. It's a lot about the transformation, but you don't see explicit graphic murder as a result of that. Mm-hmm. This film is very graphic in some ways, but it's not as like, it's not as graphic as you might think. And again, I'm trying not to give away too much. There are things in this film that are very much like adult-oriented material. That being said,
it's a horror marathon.
Yeah, it's a horror marathon.
It's a horror
please.
Marathon.
Yeah, not as bad as Serbian film.
Hopefully,
no.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I know. That's the great tag all the time now. Not as bad as Serbian film, but really,
it just
nah. Please. Well, okay. Here's my.
There's only one child rape in this movie.
Here's my litmus test for it. When I looked around at previous screenings of the restored DCP from this past year, some theaters had a warning saying, warning, contains adult sexual material.
Yeah.
I've seen this film. I don't know that it completely warrants that warning. There are a few
things... Well, from 1981, maybe.
Yeah, it's not something that you just sit down with your kids at 1 p.m. and say, like, yeah, let's just pop this in and watch it.
I mean, wait till after 10 o'clock, bring the kids in, yeah, give them a couple drinks in them.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. But it's not candy. It's not like, I don't think this is going to be something that drives people from the theater. And I think in a lot of ways, again, like a lot of Baroczyk's films, it's very, very beautiful and kind of strange and surreal. But at the same time, graphic in its own way and interesting. And I think this is going to be one that people will see, and some people who even don't know what to think about it, it'll probably stick with them for a while afterwards. I know it's
so. What
me.
You're saying is this is going to be the film that polarizes the audience. There's always one, and I'm just saying that's.
And next year we will have another film was, called The Strange.
The strange color of everybody's tears tended to polarize the audience.
And I think by polarize you mean put to sleep.
Well, yeah. I mean, some people loved it. They're generally named Joe. And then some people, it was a little tedious.
You sell Strange Color of Your Body's Tears like it was Tetsuo the Iron Man 1992.
Oh, no. That was...
No. I think this is definitely, of all the films in the lineup, this is the one that might be more challenging than the others, but I don't know. I say that sometimes about some films and people eat them
up.
If
you're smart enough, you'll like it.
This is not The Satanist. If
you sound like such an elitist when you talk about these. If you're not a stupid ass.
If you're cultured, you'll love this, you know?
If you like fine wine. And
In some ways, it's a pseudo-queer film. In some ways, it's not a pseudo-queer film. I don't know. I'm dead.
When he's not in the screen, it's not a pseudo-queer film.
Yeah, pretty much. There are things in this I think that the hardcore parts of the audience will really enjoy.
I just want to keep you talking about this. I know. You're just digging deep.
I love this film, and I think
that even
think
we
it's really
dig
interesting.
That,
yeah.
With that statement, dug it even deeper.
The greatest film I have ever seen.
My favorite in the lineup. There you go, everybody. That strange color all over again.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Okay. I'm going to go, because I'm saving one for last.
All right.
It Follows. We talked.
Yeah.
We mentioned it very briefly.
Yeah. I love It Follows too, and it Follows is a weird one because
you took a while to see it though.
I just didn't get around to seeing it.
I remember chatting with you about it, and you're like, you hadn't seen it. I'm like, you hadn't seen it?
Can I make a confession that is also maybe the ultimate endorsement? I just missed it in theaters because I'm dumb, you know, and that happens sometimes.
I'll allow that.
Yeah, thank you. I'm willing to make myself look stupid for the marathon cause for life. I finally realized about a month after it got out of theaters, hey, I want to see this.
Yeah.
Because I've heard so much about it. Wasn't on demand yet, wasn't on video yet, and I'm not proud of this, but I found a bootleg version streaming online from a Japanese disc with Japanese subtitles. And I was initially very reluctant to watch it.
You don't like subtitles.
No. Especially Japanese. I'm it's
especially Japanese because I hate
the
guys.
I hate the Japanese.
Good Lord.
Well, it's not 19...
Suddenly, it's 1945 again.
It's not 1993 anymore. I don't need to watch, you know, a bootleg tape recorded from a Japanese laserdisc of Deep Red because it's the only uncut version available. You know, you can wait and watch this stuff. I watched this with the Japanese subtitles, and I forgot there were subtitles after about 15 minutes. Yeah. I was so
it's not a dialogue heavy film.
No, there is that too. We always like to show, along with the premieres, if there's something recent that we think is underseen or something that we just think would be interesting.
I wouldn't know if I would say this is underseen. Not like Your Next. Your Next was...
Yeah, that was...
Nobody saw that.
Although it was interesting that when we showed Your Next, we thought more people would have seen it. And we were kind of stunned that so many people hadn't seen it.
I remember how quickly it was out of theaters, and when it was screened, it wasn't marketed well, and it just did not do well. I was at the screening when they did it. Whereas It Follows got a nice ramping up.
So
I think a lot of people have seen it, but it's one I wouldn't mind seeing again.
Yeah. And I think playing in a theater with this crowd will be pretty fun. I think also that the film itself really has kind of a very autumnal feel to it. And that's a horrible sell. It kind of feels like October, so we're going to show it in October. So there you go. Thank you.
We're also going to follow it up with Hocus Pocus.
It is like the most acclaimed indie horror film of the year.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I'm willing to bet some people who are on the fence about it will watch it again with this crowd and maybe gain a new appreciation for it. again, me saying, well, you know, if you're smart, you'll get
pleaser.
It. You know.
It's not like Your Next is a crowd pleaser.
Then. Oh yeah.
Whereas this one's kind of a shut up and watch kind of movie too.
Yeah. I do find after I finally saw it, I started reading about It Follows, mm-hmm. and it kind of surprised me the division amongst some horror fans over this film, because I could understand. And I mean, we're talking like mainstream press talking about, oh, some horror fans hate this film. And I don't quite understand why, and maybe I'm just blind to that. It seems like a film to me where even if you don't like it that much, mm-hmm. you could probably at least say, oh, that was interesting. Not like, well, that sucked.
Well, part of it is online writing has become so hyperbolic.
This is true.
Anyway, so you have to be like, some horror fans hate it. When you read the headline and then inside they're like, well, it wasn't my favorite. I think there's a lot of people, anyone I've heard who didn't particularly like the movie, generally it's following the hype.
I don't know
anyone who just stumbled upon it and was like, I've never heard of this, and I watched it and it wasn't very good.
Yeah.
It's people who are like, I've been hearing nothing but great things about It Follows, and I saw it and it was like, okay, but I didn't particularly like it. Now, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
But I also saw it before the hype really took off.
And I think this could be a case, too, where the hype, maybe this is far enough removed from the hype from earlier in this year that if you haven't seen it, or if you have seen it, maybe you're on the fence, you might like it. I've had cases like that at the marathon where it's been the second time through a film, and I really dug it. What's one example? 28 Days Later. Mm. 28 Days Later, when I originally saw it, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
But I kind of, I wasn't in love with it. And I saw that at two marathons within the span of a year, one in Columbus, one in Boston. And after the Boston one, I was remarking to a friend, I said, wow, I really dig that film now. And it's cool that I got to see it multiple times, because maybe it's with the crowd, or maybe it's just separating myself from the initial hype. It's like, that's a really solid film.
Yeah.
It Follows to me impressed me because it feels, from a technical level alone, it felt like a production team that had total mastery of the cinematography, of the sound design, of linking them together. There's a real kind of gliding, eerie sense to a lot of what goes on in the way that visually and aurally they tell the story.
Yeah.
And I think the concept is really interesting, too. Just the whole possession as STD type, you know, thing.
Well, and one of the things I find interesting about it is it's very much a throwback. And I know throwback soundtracks are very popular now.
Yeah.
I've seen them all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, but I remember the first one I really, really noticed was Black Rainbow.
Beyond the Black Rainbow.
But now they've kind of become commonplace. You're starting to see retro soundtracks everywhere. Not just in retro. Not just in something like Turbo Kid, which is meant to be retro. But, these kind of things. But it feels like it was shot by Carpenter in the 70s.
Yeah.
But it's also completely contemporary because people are playing on phones.
But it doesn't
clash.
There's a certain, like, slightly timeless feel or out of time feel, because some of the things they're holding, like the shell e-reader that the girl has, you're not quite sure when to place that. Like, it's not just like a Kindle that she's holding.
Yeah.
But there are parts of the film that feel very much like they were 25 years ago. Well, and setting it in Detroit, modern day Detroit, it was brilliant because it's all these decaying landscapes and these houses that are falling apart.
Yeah.
And Detroit's like that. I mean, Detroit has...
Aren't they from Detroit?
I mean, it's not like... Are they from...
I thought they were from Michigan, aren't they?
Are they from Michigan?
Or I could be thinking... I know the guys who did Vulture were from Grand Rapids area, I think.
I'm not sure. I mean, Detroit is like its own character in this film.
Don't say that. I hate that.
What?
I hate
what?
That the city was its own character. It's like its own character.
I hate that.
I hate that.
Wow.
Have you seen?
You hate the truth, don't you?
Have you seen They Came Together?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
I love that bit. They Came Together, because I see that all the time when they like to, we did, and because you know what I hear, you know what movie, you know what city I hear that talked about all the time?
About New York, yeah.
L.A.
It's
okay. I'm like, you live in L.A. You just, it's narcissism at this
point.
Oh,
you've never
it
seen Los Angeles plays itself, have you?
No, I haven't. You should watch that. No.
It's a really good 3-hour documentary about Los Angeles in film.
You lost me at 3-hour documentary.
Yeah, way to play the populist card. Well done, Donald Trump.
Here we are.
I don't got time to
watch
3-hour documentaries. Please, I'm kicking Mexicans out of the country. That was Donald Trump, by the way, not me. I don't have the power to do that.
Was that a Donald Trump impression?
That was a horrible
Kicking
Donald
Mexicans
Trump.
Out of the country. Personally.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway,
so it follows.
Yeah, it follows. I love this film, and if you don't like it, too bad. Okay. Fight. You're going to fight me over it.
Now, the last one.
They came together, by the way, as just a complete side note, is a excellent parody of romantic films by the guys who did Wet Hot American Summer.
Yeah.
And it's Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler.
Yeah.
And even if you... Even
and
if
Children's
you,
Hospital.
Well, like I finally saw Wet Hot American Summer recently.
Yeah.
I didn't like it that much. I thought a lot of it was boring. I love They Came Together. It is such a dead-on skewering of romantic comedy, modern romantic comedy.
The biggest problem, I think the biggest problem that They Came Together had was, I don't have a problem with this being in the movie, but they lost all their audience by making it R-rated. Because it's a parody.
There might be
of,
a little bit of that.
Mainly because it's a parody of PG-13 movies.
Yes.
But it's so hard R at times.
It's on Netflix. Really, kids, you can sneak in. Just steal your parents' password and watch it. You'll like it.
But it's fun.
It's really
fun. All the kids that listen to this.
Hey, I know our demographic.
Hey, I got to go watch some Bizarre Rack movies. And
Your sons like bootleg this podcast on the playground.
I'm
I know.
Sure
They're selling
do.
It for like $5 a shot.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Get it
I know.
For free.
I know. Listen to my dad and Joe talk.
That sounds
so
terrifying.
Cool.
Please don't pick up children.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on to the final one that's announced because there might be.
Is it the final one? Wow, we've steamrolled through this.
That's because we steamrolled.
Damn, we're good.
We've been doing this for an hour.
Oh.
Yeah, because we didn't talk about Shock Value or The Keep. Because
that's right.
And the next one is Night of the Creeps.
Night,
starring
Da-da-da-da!
Not just Tom Atkins, but Tom Atkins' mustache.
A film that has somehow never played a Columbus Marathon.
Yeah,
I don't know how. Yeah. Well, and
it's having a bit of a resurgence. I like to take credit for that.
I'll give you credit for that.
I have been posting. There's a guy on Twitter. His name's his. It has nothing to do with Night of the Creeps, but his handle is @Cochran_hater.
Oh yeah,
and he posts. And it's a guy who runs an account posting as Dr. Dan Chalice from Halloween 3.
Yes,
and I'm constantly.
You've told me about.
I constantly
before.
Yeah, talk
yeah, 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 yeah.
It's pretty funny.
You're right, though. I mean, Night of the Creeps in the Friendly. Last. 5 to 7 years, maybe, has really kind of come into its own as a beloved 80s cult classic. And it wasn't like people didn't like it before. I mean, I remember back in 2008, 2009, it showed at the Boston Sci-Fi Marathon. But it wasn't like Night of the Creeps at that point. It was still like, oh, here's this interesting, you know, remember Night of the Creeps? It was kind of fun.
It's
but now
weird...
it's really come around. Well, it's like, I don't think it's any coincidence that Night of the Creeps has begun to have a resurgence in popularity around the same time that Halloween 3 has begun to have a resurgence in popularity and respect. And why? The one
Tom
common
Atkins
factor?
Mustache.
Tom Atkins' mustache. We are thinking
Notice
about...
Notice how The Fog hasn't had that big... He didn't have a mustache in The Fog.
That's very true. It's very, very true, yeah. This is a fun film. And this is, I mean, from you want to know, like, behind the scenes and taking the veil back, one of the final films we booked. And in part, we booked it because we thought, hey... What do we want to make sure we have something we can close the marathon with.
Yeah.
And we thought, if all else fails, we can close with Night of the Creeps and feel good about that. Not a guarantee that it will close the marathon. We could still rearrange things. But it's a fun film. The crowd loves it, obviously. We wanted to get a couple crowd pleasers in there so we can show the other pretentious, I mean, more serious stuff to everybody else. But, yeah, I mean, it's simple. It's Night of the Creeps, you know. It's something people will love seeing and love seeing at this event. And I think this was part of our plan when we constructed that trailer reel for Shockarama. When we ran the trailers for all the films that we were going to show. And our whole thing was, wow, it'll be cool when we get to the end, when we hit them with Night of the Creeps, Twin Peaks Firewalk with Me, and Dawn of the Dead. That's your hard sell right at the end.
Yeah.
I say, if you like this other stuff we've had so far, even if you don't, here's the big three at the end. Boom, there you go.
Yeah.
Tom Atkins rolls. Your dates are dead.
Thrill me.
And maybe if you're lucky, you'll get one of Kevin's sons dressing up like Tom Atkins. He does. He is known for his Tom Atkins impersonation.
I'm pretty sure that might actually happen.
So if this little, like, what, he's 12?
He's 12 now.
The 12-year-old with a mustache comes up to you and says, thrill me.
Thrill me.
Don't take that the wrong way.
Or, don't get yourself arrested. This is not, we're not going to show Clown House this week.
There's been a disturbing trend of child abuse humor in this podcast, Kevin. Is there something you want to tell me?
You program it.
Okay. I get it. So those are the 11 announced films. We are still right now pursuing a 12th film. The intent is another local premiere.
Yeah.
and don't want to spoil anything because we have a lot of, again, a lot of balls thrown up in the air. But
don't want to drop, don't want to have an accident with our balls.
No, please don't. Please don't. But you will know when we know. We'll make an announcement via Facebook, Twitter, webpage, Grindr, Tinder, all that
Grindr?
Stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
The Horror Marathon on Grindr.
On Grindr.
Maybe that would sell more tickets. I don't know.
Not that there's anything.
The Horror Marathon is in Grandview right now. A little aroused.
Let's get around. Feeling a little itchy. Wait, that's the wrong thing to say.
So, but one more to come. And, of course, all the stuff that you love. 35mm trailers and shorts. A lot of other fun stuff. For a few of these films, we have a couple special things we want to bring out specifically for them. I won't say what, but a couple things that, I won't say.
Dan Fine Cherry Pie.
The Costume Contest, $100 first prize. Scream Contest. The Greatest Crowd in the World. I know I sound tired from saying this, but it's... I don't know. If you've gone to these, you know what we have. Yep. And it's a fun time.
Real quick for everybody, tell them how to get tickets.
Oh, yeah, tickets, yeah.
And how much they are.
I drive a...
And how much they will be.
I drive a 2000 Toyota Corolla. I cruise around town. If you see me, stop me. I'll open up the trunk, sell you a couple tickets, and then we'll be done with
and
it.
Maybe
cash
just
only.
Just ignore the shovel.
Cash
the
only,
lie,
unmarked
the
bills,
duct tape.
And... Okay, if you want to buy tickets to this amazing explosion of terror, this apocalypse of fright.
This deathgasm of
marathon mania. Okay, you have three options. Number one, you can go to the Drexel Theater in Bexley, 2254 East Main Street, during their regular business hours. I believe you can still order by phone from them, too, or charge by phone. Mm. Or charge in person. But visit the theater, for God's sake. Yeah, visit them, you know, patronize them as much as you can. They're so good to us, and you know, they deserve a lot of attention for letting us play around in their main house every year, twice a year. You can buy them at the Drexel. You can get them at Laughing Ogre Comics, 4258 North High Street, right next door to the dear departed Drexel North, rest in peace, which is now a Columbus Sports Connection. Business hours. Or if you go to www.horrormarathon.com and click on the tickets link, you can buy them via PayPal.
And those are $40 right now?
$40 in advance, $45 day of show.
But there's a PayPal charge too.
PayPal charge is $2, I believe. And that gets into the charge. And I, last I checked, that also covers the shipping to you for the postage stamp.
Okay.
If you order from.
Is that $2 per ticket?
$2 per ticket, yeah. Because okay. PayPal charges every transaction, we get something off of that. If you order from PayPal now or soon, the tickets will be mailed to you. I think our usual cutoff date is maybe if you order the week of, we hold the tickets at the door for you. Mm-hmm. So, but you can order from all three of those options. Right. And ticket sales have been good so far. We're ahead of the pace from last year.
Good.
So don't delay, by all means. I know I say that every year, but...
But don't.
Please don't delay. Yeah, and yeah,
it'll be a good time. You get to see me.
Yeah, Kevin Carr. Yeah. It's a horror marathon. What do you
it's
want?
Horror marathon.
Yeah, come on, parents, kids. I don't get it. So yeah, I'm pretty excited. It should be fun, and it's a mere 4.5 weeks away now.
Yeah,
crazy times, and I'm sure we'll talk about that again soon too. And maybe even if we're lucky, or you're lucky, audience. In between now and then, we'll do another marathon chat where we talk about the legendary 2002-2003 Studio 35 marathons. That might be fun, actually, considering the timing of the horror marathon.
I suppose the other ones were awful.
Yeah. Boy, I'm getting all nostalgic now.
That's it. So,
I don't have anything else to say.
I have one more thing to say.
Yeah.
It's a horror marathon!
Da-da-da-da!